transformation in trials. Welcome to Transformation in Trials. This is a podcast exploring all things transformational in clinical trials. Nothing is off limits on the show, and we will have guests from the whole spectrum of the clinical trials community. And we're your hosts, Ivana and Sam.
Welcome to another episode of Transformation in Trials. In this episode, we turn everything a little bit on its head. I have two guests, Dele and Rani, and they'll introduce themselves.
One of them is Rani Naik, and she has a very unique vision for what a quality organization is supposed to be. Can you tell us more about that, Rani?
Sure. Thank you, Ivana. The quality organization that I aim to build is more of a GXP focused quality, and it's got to be agile and phase appropriate to support the cross-functional teams in potential risks that you might see throughout clinical development and address them in a timely fashion, rather than building out a quality infrastructure that's too rigid or focused only on GMP or GCP. In most organizations, you need a quality system that can span across the breadth and talk to each other, so that any risks that are potential risks that are identified can be acted on by the cross-functional teams to mitigate or eliminate.
Well, that is a very interesting vision for quality that differs from at least some of the quality organizations that I have witnessed in companies. I really like that you take upon yourself the actual role of ensuring quality and not just pointing out the potential risks or problems that there may be to the quality.
The second guest on the show is Dele. Dele, can you tell us more about yourself?
Hi, Dele Babalola. I have worked in the industry now for about 15 years, and all of that 15 years has been in data management. Kind of stumbled into the industry, as seems to be the case for most people, and I've stayed since. I have been fortunate to work in organizations that had pretty good data management setups. So I've kind of seen a lot of the right way to kind of approach things, but it's also kind of interesting. And then kind of gone from that to the startup space, and more recently been really surprised at how behind other organizations tend to be, because I remember coming to Boston in 2018 and finding out some people still collected SAEs on paper. And I was just mind blown, because I was like, I haven't done this like in 10 years. Why are we doing this? And I think for me, just in general, it's seeing how we can move from being kind of a reactive industry to a more proactive one. So that in kind of the DM space, one thing that's really huge a lot, which I think almost everybody does now, is to have like databases live before the first patient in. But for me, I think where we need to be is not just to have the EDC stood up, but like all the systems, all the backend systems should be stood up before the first patient comes in. Because what tends to happen is, yes, you have database live before first patient in, but then you don't have like your, you know, SAS listings or whatever you're using to check the data. You don't have those running until like months afterwards. And then it's like, now you're finding issues, and then you're finding trends, and it's like trends you probably could have fixed early on, but it's like, okay, this is 1 year later and we found all these things that we really could have at least mitigated months ago, but you know, all that data's kind of gone to waste now. So it's trying to figure out ways to be able to have all those things up and running before the first patient is screened. And it's getting harder and harder to do as studies kind of get more and more complicated, because now there's a lot more data coming in through studies. It's not impossible, but it definitely feels like that's not the priority of the industry, because the focus is always on, oh, just get these studies live, right? And then the next thing is just get these studies locked. So it definitely feels like we're not really investing in kind of getting right. Because like, and kind of coming back to quality, is I still think in general, we're still trying to inspect quality into our studies, where we really should be trying, you know, we really should be pushing for that quality by design. And I think doing that would help that, you know, like that goal.
Oh, absolutely. And today we are kind of marrying data management and quality, bringing you together to talk about a topic that emerged during the pre-call Deli, you and I had, where we're just kind of kicking the can around and talked about inefficiencies in the life sciences industry, specifically in the GXP space. What could we do differently? And where we both bonded about this idea that why is it that each individual pharmaceutical company qualifies all their vendors? That's a lot of redundant work. Could it be done differently? And why hasn't it? So that's the topic that we're going to be basing this conversation about. But Deli, maybe in your own words, why do you think there's a potential for improvement there?
Right, because I think one of the definitions for quality, and quality gets defined in a lot of different ways, is the ability to meet requirements, right? So something that's quality, if you're able to meet requirements. And, in a sense, if somebody asks you for three things, it's quality if you meet all three things. And technically, if you meet five, the additional two is a waste, right? Because technically they didn't ask you for that. So in that sense, I find if the goal is to, if the goal is to have requirements met, then we really should ask ourselves, are the things we're doing helping to meet those requirements, or are they not? Because if they're not, then it's just a waste. And I find what's the value in different companies going to one company and asking them the same questions over and over again? Like there can't be any value in it. And for me, that's what I find with, audits, right? Is even the quality folks on the vendor side, it's like they're just jumping from one meeting to another meeting, answering the same questions, right? And for me, it just feels like we're just wasting our time.
And Rani, for you, is there good reason for why all pharmaceutical companies ask vendors the same questions to get them qualified?
I think it sometimes becomes a box checking exercise, right? So vendor management, and we live in an environment where virtually everything is outsourced. Most companies have an outsourced model, whether it's a smaller or larger organization. There's components that are outsourced, but we're all using that vendor for the same capabilities and services. So there's very little value added in going and exploring a vendor to see if they have an infrastructure, the QMS infrastructure that you want to use for the services that you're going to delegate to them. It won't tell you anything that a questionnaire wouldn't do, or remote, even an abbreviated remote audit, if you really wanted to make sure that it's an actual entity that's functioning. I think there's more value added in making sure that they have the business continuity there, they have the infrastructure in place, how it's going to perform for your program. That's yet to be seen at a qualification. So there's more value added evaluating them once you've started engaging with them and generating data versus going and checking a box. So this is where I think you can be innovative in how you design your vendor management program. Typically, a qualification might be done using a questionnaire or just a evaluation remotely. And then once you actually engage with them, you can do an on-site where you're evaluating your data against the QMS that should have performed for your program, right? So there are different ways I think it can be approached, but right now, I'm not sure of the percentage, but majority of the industry tends to do a qualification where you're all going in, asking the same questions to Deli's point, and evaluating the same capabilities, right?
Right. And it's kind of like, I think you kind of hit on something I was thinking about, which was it's like when you interview people, like I forget where they were talking about, if you had a chance to interview a person or other people that interact with that person, who would you rather speak to? Right? Because if you ask me about me, I would tell you I was the best data manager in the world. Right? My ops teams might feel different. My statisticians might feel different. And I think in the end, because I tell people this all the time when they say, oh, have you worked with this CRO before, you work with that CRO? And I say, look, everybody's SOPs are pretty much saying the same thing. Like, we're all trying to do the same thing. The real, you know, the taste of the pudding isn't eating. It's when we kind of get in this relationship, that's when I find out, are those just words on paper in your SOPs, or, you know, how do you guys actually do execute? And what it got me thinking was, we have qualification audits, and then we have requalification audits, you know, where we're kind of auditing them again. And I wonder, like, doesn't that then prove that we don't have the right metrics in place to be kind of continuously monitoring our vendors? So that, like I always say, like, for me, when I have meetings with my team, I shouldn't be asking how we're doing. Mm-hmm. I should know how we're doing. The conversation should be more around, why are we where we are? Because I know where we mm-hmm. are. And I think it's funny that requalification audits tend to be where we find out issues, which for me is a red flag, because I think, you know, like 2 years in a relationship, we should already know where we are. And, you know, those conversations should be around, you know, how have we fixed this, or how do we improve on this? Do you get what I mean? So I really think we're kind of putting all our energy in the qualification process and not enough of it in the, how do we actually track what we're doing in real time?
Yeah.
And again, being reactive and not, you know, like not being proactive with these engagements.
Definitely agree. And I think this goes back to what we were saying, vendor qualification can't be confused with vendor oversight. Mm-hmm. They're different activities. Qualification, again, sometimes can be just that checking the box. The oversight is where you should be defining your metrics for what, how you're going to actually monitor the quality of what you're getting, right? So I think sometimes, to Deli's point, if we can refocus that energy that goes into a qualification, into defining some of those metrics, again, being more proactive, then you're hopefully aligned between the sponsor and the vendor on the expectations of what's going to be, so what's going to be delivered, how it's going to be delivered, the quality of what it's going to be delivered. And again, qualification, while you're all looking at the same thing, the other piece that it picks up, it should pick up on, but again, even the qualification audit is an outsourced activity. So it's usually a contractor. So they're not going to know the details of how your infrastructure as a sponsor is set up, right? But in an ideal world, a qualification audit could potentially detect where those gaps are between your infrastructure as a sponsor and the vendor's infrastructure. Because if they're not seeing eye to eye, you're going to have those gaps. You're going to see those deficiencies start showing up as you execute with activities with them. So in order to mitigate that, one way is you could define those metrics, whatever they are going to be. So that's one way to mitigate that potential gap, right? But that's, again, it's a proactive way of thinking versus waiting for the data to roll out and then start seeing a trend and saying, hey, there's a potential trend here that we need to investigate.
But could there also be a difference between a vendor qualification, where there usually is the quality function that performs this and performs this well, or has an outsourced model for performing it, and vendor oversight, which I assume would fall to the department that's actually responsible for the vendor and may be less experienced in vendor management than this audit machine that we may have built in quality?
I think an ideal qualification should include both the quality as well as the functional subject matter expert, because that would be then your quality individual is evaluating the QMS infrastructure. The functional subject matter expert would be looking at the technical details. So in an ideal world, that's how it would work. But then again, it's always a timeline-driven industry. So you don't always have that luxury, because the functional group is involved in either getting the systems up and ready or the project up and ready. So it's usually left to the quality and vendor management or procurement, whatever the group is titled in any organization, to perform that audit as a qualification. But the most successful audits I've seen are when it's a collaboration between the quality and the functional group to evaluate either at a qualification or a review of a data, because you're both looking at it from different perspectives, and you'll have a, I think, more valuable outcome when it's when it's the two functions.
Dilly, when have you seen the strongest outcome of a vendor onboarding situation?
For me, most times I find the qualification piece like so onerous. And again, it's a resource thing, right? It's like there's only so much time you have, you know, to do a million things all at once, right? And I think that's the whole point of, you know, if we have only this much time, how do we most efficiently use that time to do all the things that, you know, like need to get done? So like Ronnie was saying, typically when we do the the audit, you know, like we'll sit with the quality folks, you know, we'll kind of tell them, you know, like, you know, pay attention to this, pay attention to that. But one thing I try to do even through the audits is I try to get familiar with like a vendor's like process again, to kind of like, you know, find those gaps where it's like, okay, this is what they do. There seems to be something they don't do that I think that they should be doing. So maybe that's something either we get them to fix in their process, or that's something that we'll need to make sure that we're doing at our end so that, you know, like we're kind of covered. And, you know, it's interesting because it's, I think kind of thinking about it now, it's like the qualification, you know, we can rethink how we do that, maybe to try to reduce the burden from it. But I almost feel like the oversight piece is probably the most critical part, and not even so much the qualification. Cause in the end, I think what we tend to use the qualification for is like those that are the gotcha moments where it's like, we want to go see if they're really doing what they should be doing, which is like, that's what we should be doing every day, right? Not like every 2 years trying to see if they kind of like drop the ball in there. And I think especially like if we're in that outsource model, we need to figure out how to make the oversight process kind of almost automatic, where it's kind of like baked into what we're, you know, what we're doing. However you're able to do that, that, you know, like you're able to be on top of what your vendors are supposed to be doing. So that I almost feel like if you're doing great oversight, you probably should never have to requalify anyone. Like if you really think about it, like what's a requalification? Like really, for me, it suggests that you're not really, you know, like you're not doing oversight. That's why you need to requalify them, right? Do you get what I mean? Because it's one thing to qualify someone because this is the first time you want to kind of get involved with them. But if you're working with them, why are you requalifying them? Like really, you know? And then if you're requalifying them, why are you finding out things you haven't noted the whole time you're working with? Then you're not doing, something's going wrong somewhere, right? So I really think it's about figuring out what kind of processes we need to have in place as the sponsor that actually add value, that help us achieve what we want to achieve, which is we want to be able to be certain that our vendors are doing, you know, like what they should be doing. And I was, while you were kind of saying we usually sometimes even outsource the auditing, I kind of was thinking of a Biggie rhyme, and I've got lawyers watching lawyers, but that's what we're doing, right? We've got vendors watching vendors, you know, and it's really interesting, you know, come to think of it, which, I mean, there is some safety there, you know, you kind of go to one person but it doesn't absolve us of our responsibility. At the end of the day, we're the ones the regulators are going to come to if something gets missed. So I think we need to figure out how our processes either, you know, address gaps in our vendors' processes, or, you know, we figure out processes that help us, you know, like find a really efficient way to oversee what our vendors are doing.
And what if we had a pool of vendors that were, this is funny. I see this every time I go to a conference. Some vendor puts on a poster that says, "We are FDA approved." There's no such thing, but okay. But what if there was? What if there was a pool of vendors that were maybe not FDA approved, but somehow life science industry approved? Would that help in establishing the initial collaboration?
Right. I mean, for me, like I see that, I think maybe that would help us get rid of a lot of fluff. Right. We may still have questions that maybe have not been answered, but at least it would, I'm trying to think of a good analogy here. It's like, if I go and I buy a car, typically a car will kind of cover, cover certain things. If I need something additional, then I can ask for like an upgrade and say, I want it to also do this. And I think that's what that would allow. Like if something was like ISO certified, you kind of know what you're getting from it to a certain extent. And if you need something more, then you could do that. So I definitely think that might be a way to kind of reduce the burden of qualifications. And, because the way I'm looking at it is, if a vendor only needs to go through this really thorough qualification from this body that certifies them, then they can, put all that effort into that one qualification exercise. And if me as a sponsor wants to use that vendor and they say, hey, we were audited by this body and, these are all the vendor responses, then I could just kind of flip through that and say, okay, they've answered all the questions I have, or maybe I have an additional question that's not on kind of like the menu. And then they can just speak to that, specifically, right? I think you kind of save, a lot of people a lot of time. And then maybe quality groups then can focus more on putting together effective vendor oversight plans instead of just kind of managing audits all the time, right? For me, the whole targeted SDV thing, it's a great analogy, right? Because Ronnie and I, when we both worked at the same company, we had a conversation about TSDB, and I said, look, every time I've seen TSDB implemented, they say, oh, we're only going to SDV the primary endpoints, the secondary endpoints, and the safety endpoints. By the time you write all that stuff down, you're already at 95%. So it's like, what target are we talking about? Like, we're already, it's almost 100%. So like, this is obviously not working. So you have to figure out a way to really scale it back and say, we're not going to look at vitals. And the reason we're not going to look at vitals is because we have a gazillion edit checks that look at that data, so that it's highly unlikely that we're going to have discrepant data that's critical, that's a huge deal. And, you try to then find ways to free up a CRA so that when they go to the site, maybe now they're doing 30% SDV, and then the additional time they have, they can then spend that time doing stuff that's arguably more value add. And I think it's the same idea I think I have with qualifications. It's like, let's try to reduce the burden on vendor qualifications so that we can actually focus on what I think is more important, which is the vendor oversight piece. Because I think that's where we're really going to get bang for our buck. Not, this 21 questions before I get in a relationship with you, which for me, it's kind of what we're doing with the qualification audits.
But Ronnie, why doesn't this exist already?
I think it exists, and there's different forums that do have audits of vendors out there that you can purchase. But I think there's a reluctance from the industry, from a sponsor oversight. Going back to my earlier comment, we equate sponsor oversight with vendor qualification. That is not the only piece. I think the more value added is the entire vendor management oversight. Qualification is such a small piece. Even the due diligence, going through an RFP for a vendor, right? Evaluating whether they have the capabilities, what the costing structure might be. That whole process, vendor qualification is just a single dot on that line. But we pay a lot of emphasis to the qualification. Whereas, all of the other pieces should, if you put in enough effort and put in the right, evaluation pieces, components, should work. The qualification tells you again that they have a QMS, but you already know that because you've shortlisted the vendors. And either it's through prior experience, either for as a team or through the individuals that have worked with them, you know that they're a viable entity. They're not just a website that's not going to perform. You know that they've been in the business because they're credible. So you're not assessing any of those elements. I think where in even the due diligence conversations, and that should give you enough oversight into what their SOP infrastructure looks like. Not the details, but you'll know that they have a framework in place. So qualification at that point is essentially done as you have gone through the RFP process. Where there's probably more value added is now agreeing on, and you put in additional plans or agreements in place, like quality agreements with some of your critical vendors, where you're saying, okay, this is how we expect to engage, this is the escalation, but we never define metrics. The metrics are never defined in a quality agreement. The metrics are never defined in study plans, because we're hesitant to start putting those into establishing thresholds or even just the framework for metrics. So I think there's more value added in saying, okay, this is how we're going to engage. These are the things that we're going to start monitoring. So then there's alignment from both parties to say, okay, this is how we're going to have to perform. This is our threshold. And those are better quality defining procedures, I guess, versus the qualification audit. So there are reports out there. Going back to your question, there are reports out there you can purchase for different vendors, both in the GCP and GMP space. And again, if they've been audited by a regulatory agency, they usually have that as a statement that they've been inspected. So if they have a prior audit regulatory inspection history, is there value added in you going in as a sponsor, qualifying them? Right. Those are the things to take into consideration when you risk rank them as well, to say, okay, if they're a viable, credible organization, they've had inspection history, if they've been in the business for a while, there's different criteria you can use to say, okay, while they're very key or a critical vendor for us, their risk rank is still low because of all of these factors that are there already. Right. So you can design your vendor program how you need it to be, where your focus is going to be on the right activities rather than just checking a box, or saying, okay, this is now done, and we can consider them qualified.
It also comes down to the collaboration with the vendor. Like you were saying before, Deli, how we shouldn't find things that we didn't already know when we requalify a vendor, then something's gone wrong. In your experience, how can you build that sort of collaboration where you actually work together and understand, well, where are the gaps and how can we work around those?
Right. And I think for me, it's about relationships. It's about data, because, you know, like if everybody knows, to Ronnie's point, everybody knows what metrics we're measuring, then, you know, like when we come to these conversations, then we already know, are we doing good or are we not doing good? Right. Because we kind of set the expectations, like, you know, we want queries answered within 5 days. We want data entered within 5 days. And if we're not tracking, then, you know, like the issue is what the issue is. So it's not me, surprising my vendor asking for something that was, you know, wasn't a clearly defined requirement. So that, you know, I think, you know, like you kind of define what the expectations are, and then you kind of work with your teams to address, you know, whatever issues that kind of come up as, you know, like studies unfold. And I think for me, like what's most important to me with vendors is just how collaborative they are, right? Mm-hmm. We'll always have issues. So like, you know, like looking for a vendor that, you know, everything's just going to go smooth, that never happens. So it's like, yeah, we're going to run into issues. But I want, you know, like I want transparency. I want you guys to let me know as soon as you find something. I don't want to be one finding it when you really should have caught it. Did you get what I mean? Or, you know, maybe I'm catching something that we didn't tell you to be looking for, then that's on me. Now you know to look for it, then you can kind of, you know, I wouldn't have to bring it up the next time. And I think that that's just something to, you kind of have to build which of vendors is set the expectations and kind of like work through that relationship. Cause a lot of times, you know, I've been in companies where it's like, oh, it's not working. We want to go with somebody else.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, yeah, like there's no, you can't be Goldilocks with, with the three bears. Like there's no perfect vendor out there. Right. You know, you're going to have to work through some issues and hopefully come out better for it.
And along that, I think one of the key pieces that we expect the qualification audit to do is to evaluate the infrastructure and know what SOPs are there. But going back to my earlier point, this is not somebody that's part of the team. This is a contract auditor that's evaluating the SOPs. So I think where there's more value added is the subject matter, as a subject matter expert or the functional team, to know the SOP. So and how you're going to engage with the vendor, right? Mm. So if you're looking at a process from end to end, as a sponsor, you have oversight of that entire process, but there might be key pieces where you're going to be also a reviewer or a signatory or saying, okay, this milestone now has been met. Mm. You're not going to know that unless you know the SOPs of the vendor that you're overseeing. Mm. So the qualification is an independent assessment, yeah, but it's also removed from the functional area. So there's while it's an independent assessment, there's no connection there. Mm. There's a gap there. So I think it's more value added, to Deli's point, when you're looking at it as a collaboration or strategic partnership, to know the SOPs, to know the process, how it's going to work from the even the sponsor vendor interactions. So defining metrics, you know, aligning on expectations, that all has to happen from a oversight perspective, rather than a qualification.
Mm. Well, I would like to ask both of you the same question. That is, well, if it is pretty clear that a lot of the qualifications that we do are more or less qualification theater, what is the key barrier for removing that? What thing could we stop doing? Whose minds do we need to change? What is keeping us from arriving at a better way of operating?
Honestly, I would say like time. there's just never enough time to do all the things that we really need to do. And I think the point that Rennie just made, where for you to really work well with a vendor, you really have to you have to know their process. Mm. Right. So that it's not just good enough for us to write our own SOPs and know our own SOPs. You really have to know their SOPs. Right. And that also kind of then lends to how many SOPs do you want to read? Right. Mm. So the idea that you're going to keep switching vendors already is telling me you're setting yourself up for failure. Right. So again, we're always managing risk, right? You're never eliminating risk, because if you stick with one vendor, then it's, you know, you've got all your eggs in one basket. But, you know, there's a pretty thick line between one vendor and having a vendor for every single project that you run. So I definitely think it's really kind of sitting down and really thinking of this vendor management process. Qualification is part of it, but then the oversight, I think, it's the bigger part of it. So it's trying to figure out how do you, you know, like put processes in place that we can actually follow, right? And taking a risk approach to it, because we can't do everything we would like to do, but then we kind of really need to think about what are the things that we should absolutely do. And, mm-hmm. But I do still come back to time though, and what we choose to prioritize, right? Because a lot of times it's go, 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 get the next project live, you know, get this thing done. And because of that, we're not, you know, like taking the time to think through these processes, think through, you know, how can we work better? And for me, I think that's the biggest constraint, is there's just never enough time to put everything that's needed in place for things to work as they should. At least from a, you know, like startup company space. That's usually the challenge, where, you know, there just isn't enough time because you're juggling so many different things.
I think from That's an interesting perspective. I hadn't thought of it actually from that angle. But I do believe time is one of the key factors. But I think it's also, as an industry, we just need to change, slowly evolve. That takes time, and it also takes momentum. But I do see it, especially with the risk-based approach to qualifying vendors. I think more and more organizations are willing to, you know, embrace questionnaires as an mm-hmm. audit medium. With COVID obviously being, I think, a necessary disruptor for a lot of ways of how we work, remote audits now are a viable option where they weren't before. With the exception of labs or, you know, manufacturing facilities where you want boots on the ground. But again, you can also argue if they've already been qualified by a regulatory agency, is there any value added? You know, majority of the labs are part of the BIMO program where they're evaluated, preclinical labs, bioanalytical labs. Majority of the CMOs have gone through a PAI inspection. So is there really value added? So I think those are the questions you need to ask yourself as an organization. And then evaluate, is it more valuable to do a qualification or do an audit of an organization 6 months into a project where you now have some viable data to evaluate? So I think as an industry, we need to ask those questions of ourselves. And going back to Delia's point on time, you know, building in those time frames where rather than allotting the time frame for a qualification, can we repurpose that now to stay cross-functionally? These are the metrics we need to agree on for this vendor that are going to be crucial for how we're going to start gauging, is this vendor performing, right? So those are different ways of, I think, looking at vendor management oversight that we should be evaluating.
Yeah. And kind of while you were speaking, I was thinking about this as well, is are the regulators doing enough, right? Because at the end of the day, we tend to, it's their requirements we tend to meet. Do you get what I mean? And a lot of times you kind of like FDA guidance, and it's like, okay, tell us what we should do. And it's like, oh, we don't want to tell you what you should do. And it's like, do you get what I mean? And for me, I think it's a bit, I don't want to use the word cowardly, but everyone's trying to kind of not be the one who takes the blame if something doesn't work out. So then, you know, like if they're saying, oh, we want you guys to take a risk-based approach, maybe they need to provide the framework and not be too timid with saying this is what you should do. Like they really should be able to give some sort of a, you know, like a framework and say, you know what, you absolutely need to do this. Like, you know, they've said, hey, you absolutely need to have PIs sign up in casebooks, which I think is total nonsense. But, you know, like, think about guidance that you can provide these companies with so they feel more comfortable taking some of these risks that you're saying it's okay for them to take the risk. I mean, I don't know what guidance you provide, but I think a lot of times, you know, it's their guidance that we want to meet so that whether all this fluff we're doing, it's not just because we like doing fluff. We're doing the fluff because that's what the regulators seem to want. Right. And so maybe there's something that's lost in translation there, but we wouldn't be doing fluff if they didn't seem to like fluff. Right. That's the reality there.
So I think one of the things that with the regulations and the guidelines that are provided, they're intentionally pretty vague or give you the boundaries within which you need to operate. Right. When you talk about from a risk-based, risk tolerance is individual. It's based on the organization, and there's a business component to it. There's the program, and then there's the data and the safety pieces, the elements, the compliance aspects that we should be considering. So when you talk about risk-based approach, I think it's evaluating your internal program and how can you defend it from end to end, right? I think that's where when you say risk-based, it's defining your risk tolerance, knowing your risk registry internally, knowing your potential risks at a program level, business level, study level, data level, and then tying them all together and then creating your own program is how I look at it. So while we may want the regulators to be more prescriptive, then it's going to work for some, not all. So some of the guidelines are vague because it's intended to work for the entire industry as a whole. So if you're a virtual company versus a large pharma, you want to have the flexibility to say, okay, this is the program that I want to defend. Right. So I think that's where I would say looking for the regulators to, rather than looking to the regulators to say, hey, this is how we want you to do it. I think as an industry, we can always say, okay, this is the industry. There's also the industry standard you should be adhering to, right? So I think we can define that, what that looks like. And then the regulators, obviously, that gives them confidence that we as an industry have given this some enough thought to say this is the process that we want to follow. Right. So that's how I look at it from a quality perspective. Rather than having it prescribed down to me, I want the flexibility to say, okay, this is the framework and this is the process. This is the overall infrastructure. And then defend it up to the regulators to say, does this now meet your expectations? And in majority of the inspections that have either participated in or led teams on, that is what has successfully worked versus saying, okay, this is your regulations. But the regulations are always at the forefront. You are always aligning to them. But I think it's better to be able to define what that looks like rather than having it be too prescriptive.
Yeah, I'm not saying if you look at that RBQM model, right, how long have we been doing this RBQM piece, right? And everybody's still kind of figuring it out, right? And for me, it's kind of like the FDA guidance on UC trials, right? Where it's a recommendation, you don't have to do it, but we kind of know, if we don't do it, then we need to come up with a really strong rationale. So maybe it would be useful to have, you know, like use cases and say, hey, here's an example of how you could run it. I mean, and you know, like small, you know, like you, Transcelerate may have, you know, certain solutions for certain things. Avoca might have certain things, you know, so like you can kind of go through Avoca and kind of pull up a bunch of like KRIs and stuff. But, you know, so I'm not saying go to the extreme where it's top down and, you know, they say this is exactly what you want to do. But I think the other extreme of it where it's like, oh, we're just going to be loosey goosey with the whole thing and kind of just tell you, you know, liquid that's wet, and that's the only guidance you get, right? Like, there's a lot of room in between those two approaches, right? So it's just, you know, like if we are serious about, you know, because I just feel it's like if we're all kind of just like working in the dark, you know, like we're wasting a ton of time, we're wasting a ton of money, you know, drug prices are not going to come down if everyone keeps making the same mistakes over and over and over again. So something needs to change somewhere.
It sounds like, Ronnie, your approach depends on having that internal person who can take a stand and say, well, this is how we're going to do it here. This is what we believe is sufficient or enough or going to get us the quality you need.
Yeah. And I think this, again, goes back to the time. How many times do we do an internal process flow, right? Mm. For unless there's an issue that comes up, that's when the investigations happen and we actually like backtrack to say, okay, what is our process? How did we arrive at this? That's when we identify the potential gaps. If we all spent energy in those kind of activities to say internally, this is our process, that, back to your point, will also help us design an overall program, right? Even the risk-based. That's if you do an entire process flow, that's when you could say, hey, there's redundancy here. Can we eliminate this? You know, there's a gap here. So we wait for the event or the issue to happen before we actually go back and evaluate. Mm. So getting into, I think as an industry, if we get into more of a proactive industry, where we're actually giving enough time and energy to the activities that will add value versus time-based, there might be some value in that.
Mm. Well, as we start rounding off this episode, we always ask our guests the same question in the end. And that is, and I'm going to ask both of you this question. If we gave you the special Transformation Trials magic wand that has the ability to change one thing in the life sciences industry, what would you wish for?
I think the one thing I might ask for is more transparency and sharing of challenges and issues. Because we, as an industry, we all face the same challenges. You know, quality events by design are happening because we're all making the same mistakes, right? Mm. So maybe not so much on the data side. The data sharing happens because there's a scientific aspect to it. But, you know, the challenges we face or the issues that, you know, we might encounter from process perspective, more transparency so we can all learn from each other.
Oh, we don't even need a magic wand for that. But things being what they are, looks like we do. I would honestly wish, I would try to get people to be a bit more open-minded. Mm. Because, you know, like sometimes when, you know, I like conflict. Because for me, it's like, if you agreed with me, then it's boring. I want to hear something else. Like, you know, if I say A, I want you to say B, and I want you to tell me why you think it's B. And a lot of times I've been in positions where, you know, like, you know, people say, we're not going to do that. And I'm like, why? And, you know, and they can't tell me, oh, like, you know, this is why we think that's a bad idea. And, you know, a lot of ways it's a lot of, oh, we've always done it like this, or, you know, that's just totally different. But I really wish, you know, as an industry, like we were kind of, we did more than talk about innovation, and we actually tried things. I mean, obviously within, you know, within within the bounds of nothing too crazy, you know, but that people really put their money where their mouth, you know, mouths are, in terms of trying to really push the envelope to like speed things up. I think that that I definitely would like to see a lot more of. And there are people doing that, you know, but I would say probably not enough.
Well, those are both very good wishes. And Transformation Trials grants you your wishes, at least to our ability. If our listeners have follow-up questions or want to reach out to both of you, where can they find you?
I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me and ask any questions through messages.
Yeah, welcome. Best to find me on LinkedIn if you're looking for clinical research stuff. I don't talk work on any other platform, so.
Okay, well, thank you so much both for joining this episode. This was an awesome conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Ivana, and welcome to the US.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoy your stay. Is this your first time?
Staying? Actually, no. I lived in Texas as a child.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Completely different experience.
Very different.
Definitely not San Francisco.
Could be different countries.
So, well, thank you very much. This is great conversation.
Yeah, this was fun.
You're listening to Transformation in Trials. If you have a suggestion for a guest for our show, reach out to Sam Parnell or Ivana Rosendahl on LinkedIn. You can find more episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or in any other player. Remember to subscribe and get the episodes hot off the editor.